Hello and welcome, you're listening to the Kraz Files podcast. It's Thursday the 21st of May 2015. This podcast is available from iTunes, so you can download and subscribe over there, and you can also get the podcast from podomatic.com. That's our main podcasting website for this project. Check us out there at Podomatic. You can also check us out on Facebook. Look for the Kraz Files. Plenty of stories going up there each day, and you can also play our podcasts up there on Facebook and share them. And we're also active over on Twitter, putting some stories up there. And you can also check out our YouTube channel, which is the Kraz Files as well, and that's always Kraz for Kraz. And you can send us an email to thekrazfiles@yahoo.com.au about anything you would like. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Everyone out there, whoever you are. Hey, Garth.
Hello, Adam. Yes, how are you?
We're ready to rumble. And we have a great guest today. We're joined by Donald Fox. Donald's site is donaldfox.wordpress.com, and he's exposing the nuclear truth of 9/11. Welcome, Donald. Great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here, guys.
It's going to be a great chat today, and to get into your incredible work, and that it is. And I'll just say this, Don, the 9/11, Garth and I have always sort of promised that we'd keep talking about it, you know? We'd keep going into it no matter what, because so many young people now who weren't brought up or only very young at the time, they're sort of just not interested anymore, and so many people have been taken through so many doors that you know, and all the arguments and you know, it's got crazy for them, and they're not interested. And of course, we have the directed energy, you know, and and these nanothermite sort of 9/11 truth movements, and the architects and engineers, and all this stuff, you know. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm not going to sit up here and say I didn't go through Judy Wood's book. I did. I read through it, and I was taken a bit by it. I thought, wow, you know.
Mm.
You know, I was, and you know, and these loose change and everything, because on that day, I knew. When that happened, when I was watching that, I was one of the billions of people watching it. I couldn't believe it, but I knew deep down something was wrong there, you know. And I heard you say that on your show with Fetzer. You were just saying this is America, you know. It's the United States where this happened, and it's just crazy. It's New York City, and for Australian people growing up, it's sort of almost a magical place, you know, because you see it on the movies and everything, and here with these twin towers out of the clear blue sky on a beautiful day, blown to kingdom come, you know. And as an outsider as well, not to mention just how the Americans must have felt. I mean, it's a psychological attack for every person on this earth that saw it on that day. And you were right, you know. You think, God, this is America. You know, the biggest mighty military power on earth, you know, with one of the most famous cities on earth, with some of the biggest towers just being blown to kingdom come in front of the world. And you just can't believe it, you know. So we promised that we would keep pouring through this, and I came to your information about the nukes and started looking through it, and I'm not up to speed with all the nuclear physics of it, but your stuff is the most you know, hard hitting and brass knuckles sort of stuff that I've been able to read that really makes sense, Don. I sort of read it now and I'm getting sort of hooked on this, thinking this actually makes sense to me. So great work, and you're going to talk to us about that today. It really is good work, and it's time to sort of bring this out into the light and start to try and present this material, Don, to people, to show them that we're being hoodwinked when it comes to 9/11. We call it a room of smashed mirrors, crushed mirrors, with a light shining on it, and someone saying to you, you know, try and find a piece here. You just can't, you know, because so many people are pushing you into different doors, and there's so much lies made up about it. But your nuke research is incredible, Garth, isn't it? So
yes, certainly is.
It really is. So start where you'd like to today, Donald. Tell our guests a little bit about yourself, how you sort of stumbled into this, and take it from there.
Okay, I guess I could start out by saying, you know, I was just a regular Joe Blow nobody. I've never been in the military or intelligence or nuclear physicist, anything like that. On the day of 9/11, I had a job in a cubicle working in downtown Minneapolis, not too far from the Metrodome where the Vikings play. And I was basically a paper shuffler. So I'm listening to the radio, and I heard, you know, I was listening to sports radio. It was football season. And, you know, they break in, hey, it sounds like a plane has hit one of the World Trade Center buildings. And then a few minutes later, they cut in, hey, the other tower got hit. And then it was like everything, you know, the word was starting to spread through the office, and people were just looking at each other like, you know, the eyes were bulging, the jaws were dropping. This just can't be happening. And, you know, I got home that night, and I'm watching the video over. I didn't see the video until, you know, 5 p.m., 5:30 Central Time. You know, I'm just watching these buildings go down over and over and over again. I'm like, wow, how can that be that these huge, enormous buildings just went down like that in less than 30 seconds.
Your brain doesn't compute, does it? My brain was fizzing over. I couldn't understand it. I was like, what? What the hell?
Yeah, I was basically numb. Probably like 99% of the American public was just numb. And I was like, you know, something, I had been researching JFK since 92, you know, on my own. I hadn't done anything publicly with it. I was just curious about what really happened, how the country really works. I used to be kind of a political junkie. I'd watch C-SPAN all the time. And then I was, you know, I'm watching C-SPAN 20 hours a week back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm like, well, okay, now what I'm seeing here on C-SPAN isn't really adding up to what's going on in reality. There's got to be another layer to this. And so then I happened upon the movie JFK, and boy, did that open a Pandora's box. But even though I knew that was, you know, I had read books like Best Evidence by David Lifton and On the Trail of the Assassins by Jim Garrison, and then Colonel Prouty's book, JFK, you know, Vietnam and the CIA and the plot to assassinate John F. Kennedy. I'd read books like that, so I knew government chicanery was definitely on the table. But when those buildings came down, I was just shocked, like everybody else was. And it really took me about 3 years to for the fog to kind of wear off a bit. And I heard Dave Von Kleist on with George Norrie, and he was talking about the planes and the flash and the pod and all that business. And I'm like, well, whatever you want to say about Dave Von Kleist, we know that whatever he was describing there could not have been commercial airplanes hitting the buildings. So I'm like, that was a scam. They done did us. Okay, so what really happened? And then that started me on this journey. So probably late 2004, early 2005, I started really digging into it. And I'm like, okay, well, the plane in the videos looks like it's got a longer nose then what they said the plane from Boston took off. It was supposed to be a 767-222, and the nose was just too long for that plane in all the videos that you see, you know, hitting the South Tower. And I first thought that's got to be probably some type of military drone plane, something like that. Whatever it wasn't on a commercial plane. So I'm like, okay, so this whole thing is out of whack. Well, what brought down the building? So then I started digging into that, and I came across the first site I really saw was the Finnish military expert, and he was talking about hydrogen bombs. And then I'm sure people have seen that. So if you haven't, I guess you could just Google the Finnish military expert. That should bring it up for you. And then he shows what's going on with the Trade Center, and then he's comparing that to nuclear test explosions out in the desert. And I'm like, wow, boy, that looks eerily similar. That looks like the same type of device. Whatever we're blowing up in the desert, that looks like what happened to the Twin Towers. And that explains the mushroom clouds and the pyroclastic flow. And it explains all that dust and the lack of debris. There was virtually no debris pile left of the Twin Towers.
Mm.
Maybe a couple of chunks, you know, here and there, but most of the stuff was either it was basically turned to dust. I've seen estimates where the Twin Towers and Building 6 and Building 7 altogether weighed about 3 billion pounds, and they only collected 1.2 billion pounds of debris. So that means roughly two-thirds of those buildings were completely vaporized.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, so once those kind of numbers hit you, you think, okay, I have to come up, in order to explain what happened here in New York, then now we have to find a mechanism that can explain two-thirds of these buildings getting vaporized. Now all of a sudden, once you hit that realization, now your suspected weapons list gets pretty short. So that's how I got to the nuke angle. And so yeah. I was a hardcore nuke guy from early 2005 on.
Yeah, that's incredible. The first I came across it, Don, was with Dmitry. Was it Dmitry?
Yeah, Kalazov. Yep, Dmitry Kalazov.
Yeah.
And that made so much sense to me that it was a nuke that could do that. Nothing else made sense. And as soon as I got into his stuff, I thought, well, you know, this is it. This is the answer. But you're taking it further. You're taking it further on and explaining a lot more than what he was able to. He sort of suggested that the nukes were in place for demolition purposes and things like that. Well, I don't know about that, but I don't know how they did the nuke. So can you get us into that, how they actually would have set the nukes up to take the buildings down?
Sure. Yeah, let's touch on that. What actually happened? Okay, so what's my mini nuke theory, and how is that different from Kalazov? Okay, Dmitry Kalazov's theory is that three 150 kiloton bombs were detonated below the Twin Towers in Building 7, and that's what took them out. Okay, now I've been to some simulators, and once you realize how big a 150 kiloton bomb is, one 150 kiloton bomb is just too much for what we saw on 9/11. So we had to reject that hypothesis. But now, was the gist of Dmitry's theory is that nuclear bombs were detonated below ground on 9/11. Now, is that correct? Yes, undoubtedly correct. He's just got the yields wrong. And there was also above ground nuclear detonations on 9/11. And by definition, if you're going to have an above ground nuclear detonation, it had to be low yield. Not that you couldn't blow up a big bomb above ground, but it would have been painfully obvious. This fooled most of the people for years and years. So it's not obvious that it was a nuke. I mean, right off the bat. So how did they do it? Okay, so what Dmitry was talking about was not that there was actually bombs planted in there from day one. But what he meant was there was tunnels underneath the towers to where they could place the bombs when it was time to do it. And I think that probably is correct. I don't have any inside info on what was actually below the towers or anything like that, but there's plenty of evidence there for underground nuclear detonations. And if you watch the movie 9/11 Eyewitness, which I've watched hundreds of times, you'll always hear these massive explosions before these buildings start coming down. And those were underground mini nukes.
Yeah.
Mm.
So how did this whole thing go down? Let's talk about the towers. So we hear underground, like, let's take the North Tower. 17 seconds before the North Tower starts coming down, you can hear a massive earth-shaking explosion. And Siegel was filming across the river in New Jersey, and the ground just shook over there even, you know, a couple miles away or whatever it was. So we know that there was a huge explosion below ground, and there was another series of explosions. And then after that, it's 17 seconds after that first bomb goes off, we see the top of the North Tower, we see a flash, and then it starts coming down. And then it explodes, the North Tower explodes, you know, from the top down and from the inside out, and it's sequentially. So it appears that a series of mini-nukes were detonated from top to bottom to kind of simulate a free-fall collapse. And the mini-nukes were there to take out the 47 core columns of the World Trade Center building, the towers. And then I think on the outside of the building, you had timed conventional explosives going off at the same time, and that was also sequentially. So there was kind of almost maybe a three-stage demolition of the towers. So nukes taking out the core columns, going from top to bottom, and then you probably had like RDX or HMX type explosives on the outer part of the building, yeah, to take out that steel structure. But the nukes that were detonated in the core columns now, very small, you know, low yield, and they were shape charges. Configured to explode up and then detonated sequentially from top to bottom.
Crikey. You can see the building being blown to bits, though, Don, can't you? I mean, when you look at Building 7, it's just... Building 7's like a magic act. I mean, it just disappears. It just drops. And you look at the Twin Towers, they're just being blown outward and upward in every direction as they go down. It's amazing. I mean... if a building would just fall down because of the jet fuel, it wouldn't do that. I mean, you can clearly see something's blowing up in those buildings, you know?
Yes, we see with the North Tower particularly, we see explosions, and the debris is getting ejected up at a 45-degree angle and out. So it's going out, up and out at a 45-degree angle. Now, I've heard estimates of material being ejected from the North Tower at 70 miles an hour. So if the building is just falling down, where does the energy come from to eject steel structures that weighed thousands of tons up and out at 70 miles an hour? Where does that energy come from?
Yeah.
Where is the energy that pulverizes all the concrete, gypsum, marble, steel? We see steel beams. My friend Judy Wood
directed talks energy, about,
if you watch her presentations, and I've watched quite a few of them, you can see she does talk about how steel beams are getting ejected, but before they hit the ground, some of them are just turning to dust. So how does kerosene turn steel beams into dust?
Yeah.
Okay, that obviously can't happen. I mean, I got a propane grill out in the backyard.
Jeez.
Propane burns hotter than kerosene does, and my grill never turns into dust and blows away into the neighbor's yard.
Well, if that was true, Don, you'd never want a barbecue again, would you? There'd be explosions happening all over the neighborhood.
The local fire department would be over here.
It'd be permanently
probably the police. You'd get arrested.
Well, it was amazing in one of those videos where that whole top of the tower leant over, and then it just went into dust.
Yeah, it's the
salt tower. That was amazing. I mean, yeah. What are we talking here, about 10 or 15 floors? It was top, a massive section, yes.
Looks like about the top 25 to 30 floors. That whole, the towers were built in like sections, three sections, so you had thirds. Like if you took an elevator, you'd get off at the first third, and then you have to change elevators. The elevator shafts didn't go all the way down, except for I think the maintenance elevators probably did. But the buildings were sectioned off. So that whole top section of the South Tower tilts at like was it almost a 20, 21 degree tilt?
Yes.
And then instead of falling into the street like it should have done, it gets vaporized.
Mm.
Incredible. It turns into dust before it hits anything. So that right there, just watching what happens with the South Tower, well, and the North Tower too. I mean, with that South Tower, how can that section of, how can all that, how much do you think a third of that thing weighed? So the whole building weighed 500,000 tons. At the top, the steel was lighter. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, maybe 100,000 tons of building just going poof.
Yes, that's unbelievable.
What can explain that?
Jesus. So I guess Dr. Wood's thesis on dustification is correct, because there wasn't really anyone who said that. I mean, you know, when you look at it, that building's been dustified, but not with free energy weapons. So
Yeah, the whole Tesla thing is
exactly. Yeah, I mean, as yep. I said, I got drawn into it because it was so different. You know, I just sort of thought I, because the buildings, you know, you see them being blown to dust, and I say to people, you honestly think that jet fuel, you know, from a plane did that, and the buildings acting in that way as it goes down. I mean, if a plane would just burn, I mean, the top floors would just burn out for a while. That buildings that size aren't just going to come down and be blown to bits on the way down. And as you said, steel and reinforced concrete and all that just disappearing into dust. It's incredible. And as I say, Ground Zero describes the point on the Earth's surface closest to a nuclear detonation. In the case of an explosion above the ground, Ground Zero refers to the point on the ground directly below the detonation. On 9/11, the World Trade Center complex became Ground Zero, as we know, the epicenter of a nuclear bomb detonation.
Mm, yeah, that was interesting. Yes, that's incredible.
That's one thing I say to my critics. So why do they call it Ground Zero?
Yeah, yes, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's their saying. And also, I saw some time ago a close-up, a real close-up of where the plane was supposed to have entered into the building, and it zigzagged. The steel beams, they weren't cut at the angle where the plane hit it. They were cut across, sort of parallel to the ground. And you can't see it at a distance. It looks as though the plane's actually cut into that section of the building at an angle. But when you zoom in right up to the building, all the beams are cut horizontal. So, you know, that explains that there were these, at the time that they sort of pretended that the planes hit or whatever it was, they've used these explosives to create those holes at an angle. They've even thought about that. But, of course, they didn't do it properly enough, of course, because I don't know enough about explosives, but I don't know why they did that. Do you?
Well, I haven't done a ton of work on the planes. I guess I would say this. We know for a fact that no commercial plane crashed anywhere on 9/11. There was no planes that were actually hijacked. Two of the planes never took off that day. They weren't scheduled to fly. And the other two were still in service until 2005. So we can rule out any commercial planes. So what actually hit the building?
Yeah.
You know, my, you know, and I hate to even throw it out because they'll attack me on that too, but just it's been kind of my working theory that it was actually missiles that hit the building. Now, was the building pre-rigged to blow the hole? It probably, more than likely. Now, did a missile or two hit each building? That's very possible, because if you want to take the radar data and all this other stuff at face value, well, we know a commercial plane can't fly 500 miles an hour, 1,000 feet up.
Yes.
We know that's impossible, but can a missile fly 500 miles an hour, 1,000 feet up?
It certainly can, yes.
It sure could, yeah. So,
yes.
Now, what you saw on TV, probably a load of BS. So what actually hit the building? You know, my best guess, there are some witnesses that report missiles. So I guess, you know, until something better comes along, I'm going to probably stick with that theory.
Hmm. Yes, that seems the most logical, because as they've already proven that conclusively, that you can't fly those massive commercial aircraft at that height at that speed.
No, for a plane to fly that fast, yeah, it's got to be at like 35,000 feet.
Mm.
There's just too thick at sea level there like that for a commercial plane to travel that quickly.
Yes, yes. Jesus. Oh, dear. And there's so much in this, isn't it? That's,
well, Don goes a lot into the evidence on the ground there, don't you, Don, which is interesting. You know, all the concrete and all the stuff that was there. I mean, there must have been a mix in with all the beams and the broken stuff and the bodies and the metal and desks and phones, computers. I mean, unbelievable. But looking at the nuclear detonation evidence itself, does that explain the instantaneous sort of rusting effect of Ground Zero as well?
Yeah, you'll get that in a nuclear event.
It looks like rust, doesn't it? Like red rust on, down there. Yeah,
quite a bit. Yeah, like you were mentioning there. Okay, no desks, chairs, phones, or toilets were found in the rubble of the Twin Towers. So if the buildings just fell down, there would be a big stack of debris, and those desks would be there. But no, if you, like, again, you know, if you watch 9/11 Eyewitness, you'll see the CNN producer, Rose Arce, I believe her name was, A-R-C-E, and she's standing next to a cop car, you know, several blocks away from Ground Zero, and it's just covered in this sawdust material. She puts her hand in it, and it's just, there's little tiny chunks, and it's just mostly just dust. And they say they can see chunks of, you know, the pictures that people had on their desks. It's now just little pieces of paper, little chunks.
So I guess, if a building had have just come down magically, like they say it did, and smashed everywhere, you know, you would have all that material to go through, wouldn't you? All the phones and desks and all the bits and pieces to go through, but everything seemed to be vaporized.
Exactly. Yeah, there would have been, you know, a stack of pancakes, as it were, like 8 and 14% of the building. So you're talking, there should have been at least 10 stories of building there left over. But no, there's, at the highest point, they said maybe 100 feet of debris. But it was mostly just gone. And, you know, I've got an interview with Frank Morales on my blog. And he talks about when he got there, he was just floored at the lack of debris. He's like, when he got down to Ground Zero, they called him in to do last rites. And he said, well, there should have been these massive buildings, but when he got there, there was like nothing there. Mm. And 1,000 people got completely vaporized. So they didn't even have bodies of 1,000 people. And he was talking to one of the Ground Zero workers, and he said, well, where's all the people? He's like, feel the earth. And the earth was all, Frank said the earth was damp and moist with the bodies of the dead. The people were just vaporized right into the ground.
Oh, dear.
And what Don was all that, you know, when you're watching, I think I saw in the video on your site, it was from Hoboken or something, and they're just filming across the water there when the Twin Towers were standing. Yep. And what is with all the smoke, you know, so much smoke. I mean, I don't think that much would come from a plane after it had hit. It just seemed to get worse and worse before it collapsed.
That's a great top, you know, and that's something I haven't covered in a lot of interviews, and I keep forgetting to do it. But I've seen other angles, like where the chopper flies over, like, say, the North Tower.
Lots of choppers around, yeah.
Yeah, and you can see what appears to be smoke machines on top of the North Tower. You know, people had tried to get out of there, but the top door was locked, so you couldn't get out to the helipad there from inside the building.
So the helicopters could have been lifting people off traditionally, really.
They could have, yeah. But they didn't want cameras getting there too close, because if you look, they kind of fly over quick. But if you look, you can kind of look at the tops, you know, the top corners there, the North Tower. It looks like there's smoke machines up there just billowing out all this fake smoke. And I've got another picture where you look at the North Tower. You can see what it looks like a series of pipes or whatever. And it looks like it's just a straight line going across the building. And that's where a lot of the smoke is coming from. So it looks like this yeah. nozzle type thing is just billowing out all this smoke.
So the smoke was a prelude to the buildings being brought down to impress the people that it was on fire.
Yeah, they were trying to make the fire look worse than it was. And like at the Pentagon.
Worse than it was. God.
Yeah.
As I said, I mean, if a plane hit it, it wouldn't have been like that. And it just seemed to get worse and worse before they went. And then they blew to pieces, to powder.
The puny amount of jet fuel that was in there, relatively speaking, would have burned off within 10 minutes. So how do you have smoke billowing for 90 minutes in the case of the North Tower?
How does the jet fuel, Don, go from the top of a building that size down to the bottom and bring it down? Down through all the elevators and floorboards and metal and steel?
I was talking to Jim about that. I'm like, well, that was some pretty well-trained jet fuel to get off at the elevator bank and then catch the next elevator.
Ring the bells, you know, get off on floor 9, down to floor 7, down to floor 1, and then off it goes. And that's crazy.
And then once it gets all the way to the bottom, then it decides to explode in the lobby there.
Yeah, it's a joke. Well, years ago, I saw a documentary on them building those towers. And I mean, the steel and that went into them was absolutely unbelievable.
Oh, the making, yeah. You can see the old footage of them making the buildings. I've had a look at that on YouTube. It's amazing, yeah.
Well, there was a lot of concrete and steel. So those buildings were built to withstand, like, hurricane force winds.
Mm-hmm.
So people would say, well, the towers were hollow and this and that. Well, if they were completely hollow, how did they stand up?
Yeah.
You know, a 50-mile-an-hour, you know how much energy a 50-mile-an-hour wind would inflict on a surface that big? You know how strong that's got to be to withstand that?
Yes.
So the tower stood for 30 years, no problem. And then on one day, a puny plane, the engineer, Frank DeMartini, was talking about that, where when the plane hits the outer part of the building, it's like pushing a pencil through the screen door. It does nothing. It does nothing to the structural integrity of the building.
That's a good explanation.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So from that standpoint, yeah, people, they see a plane in the building. Oh, that looks bad. Well, yeah, what you saw on TV does look bad. But when you think about it, how does that explain what we see later where these buildings are coming down? 11 seconds in the time of, is what it's took for the North Tower to come down, and 9 seconds for the South Tower, according to his own
free fall.
And
what fascinates me with these people that did this and planned it, surely, it's a high level of expertise that they would have realized that jet fuel wouldn't be a suitable excuse to bring the buildings down. Surely, one wonders why they used that.
It's crazy, isn't it, Gub? But it's just so brazen what they did, just like JFK blowing his head off, you know? I mean, they're so brazen, but they knew people would rip this to pieces, and that's why these movements seem to have been set up. And then the deeper that people go into the information, then you get the Woods and all these people that keep setting up this information to take you away from who seemed to have done it.
To me, the 9/11 truth movement, to me, is the biggest misnomer there's ever been. And I've talked to a couple of my friends, and one of them, she claims, that the 9/11 truth movement was started on September 10th. You know, they knew they were going to need something. They figure, here's probably how it's going to shake out. The vast majority of the public will believe whatever we tell them, because if they see it on TV, by God, that's got to be true, okay?
Exactly.
So,
that's right. Yeah, it's got to be true.
Plus, there's that line blurred, Donald, isn't there? There's that blur of particularly American people watching so many movies. I mean, how many movies are there where America gets attacked? And you get that blurred lines between reality and what's a movie, what's real, what's not, you know? It's crazy.
Well, that actually happened, Adam, if you remember. Don, I was in the house, and Adam came in he was living with us, and he turned the television on. He said, have a look at that. And that was when the planes were going into the building. And I turned around to Adam and I said, what's this, a Bruce Willis movie?
Yeah, where's Bruce?
That's what I have said to my like people like my brother. I'm like, look, this is a if you would have saw Bruce Willis in this movie, you would say, hey, this is a load of BS, man.
What a film. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when Adam said, no, this is actually happening now. Well, I just sat down for the rest of the day and it just
smacked.
Yeah.
There's another movie out with Jamie Foxx called White House Down or something where they attack the White House or I don't know, all these landmarks and in America. I mean, it's such a crazy don't you have a country there that's so extremely vigilant, you know, as they say, against terrorism. But here they are making all these millions of movies about terrorists attacking them, which seems really crazy. But as I said, that I think that line was blurred for so many people on that day because I couldn't compute it. I just couldn't believe what was happening. Even after it, even days, weeks, months after it, I just couldn't understand how that would take place in that country. You know, what the hell?
Yeah. What fascinates me is who did it.
Exactly. And that's why, I don't know, we seem to have a lot of people, as you said, Don,
making us chase our tails. Israel and Mossad have been into it. You know, there's been people from the military and many others now coming out and saying, well, the only people that could have done it was Israel. So
the CIA and the Mossad, that's your top two suspects, and they're both run by Zionist Jews. So,
with dual nationalities.
Yeah, dual Israeli citizens.
Yeah, their allegiance doesn't incorporate the United States, I tell you.
Not at all.
I don't think they care at all. And this this creature, Garth, how many standing ovations did Benjamin Netanyahu get in the American Congress?
I mean, 28?
I think it was more, wasn't it, to see the American Congress on their knees groveling over this demon. You know, it's just astounding, astonishing, gobsmacking, yep. Don. I just
when Netanyahu is here, what I've heard is they've got AIPAC representatives that are in the chamber there. And they take notes as to how many times the various representatives stand up and clap, you know, and who sits down first. Almost nobody wants to be the first guy to sit down.
Jesus. Watching every person.
Does that affect the brown paper bag, does it?
Yeah, they're a bunch of trained SEALs. That's what they are.
Yeah, half of them, or a lot of them are pedophiles as well, and they're compromised, and they do what they're told, otherwise they'll release it publicly, you know? David Cameron in the UK, his top advisor's a pedophile. They're talking in the main media, though, now that all these groups of pedophiles within the UK government and all over the place. And we heard that on Veterans Today with these top military people and people in your government. They take them and put them up in the Hilton with a little girl or boy waiting or prostitute, and it keeps them happy and shuts them up, you know?
Yeah, you either play ball or they destroy you.
Sure, and they will, won't they? They'll utterly destroy your life. Yeah, bring you down.
You can either take the paycheck and have parties with the little kids, or if you decide to cross us, we will take you out. If we can't buy you and we can't compromise you, we will take you out.
God damn. How much power do they have? Because you're on the ground over there, Donald, in the U.S. How much power does this AIPAC and these groups
it's enormous. God. I mean, nobody understands how the dollar is going to collapse. Well, really, for that, if the dollar collapses, that's going to be like the end of the world. I mean, not just for the United States, but it's going to be world chaos. Do you know how much power just to have a reserve currency like that? These guys have spent hundreds of years getting the dollar to the point where it is, to where all these countries do business in it. Now, some are starting to drop it, but you really can't go completely away from the dollar. So right there, how many human interactions do you control just with your currency that you print out of thin air? And they say, well, it's backed by nothing. That's not entirely true. It's backed by the U.S. military. If you decide to not accept dollars for your oil, we'll be paying you a visit very, very soon. And that's really what's going on with Iran. Iran is not accepting dollars for their oil, so that's why they have to get in there and take them out.
Yeah. God. It seems like America has been possessed on by an entity, and it's just taken over completely the host. And
It's true. Yeah, that's the United States is, people ought to say, well, it's 1913. That was before that. The second bank of the United States, the charter ended in 1811, and Congress voted not to renew the charter. So then Lord Rothschild said, well, they're either going to give me my bank or the United States is going to find itself in a most disastrous war. And that's what the War of 1812 is all about. Although technically Britain lost the war, they still did enough damage to where the Congress voted for the Rothschild Central Bank, and that's what ended the war. So then they controlled it. That went on for a while till Andrew Jackson, who was probably the best president this country's ever had. It was Jackson and no bank. So he finally kicked those guys out. He was going to rout them out, and he did rout them out. But eventually they creep back in because they just want power. It's just they lust after power, greed, power, money.
Yeah, and they seem to feed on death and fear as well. You know, it's amazing.
Universal war. Yeah, so we're kind of getting off the beaten path here, but this is the kind of history that people don't look at, and this is how you can get a 9/11. You know, once you kind of get the pattern of these guys, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, you had this perfect country and then boom, one day 9/11 happened. No, you had a very flawed country for a very long time and then 9/11 happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess on that day, seeing those towers, so many millions of people working in and out of there over the years and going through and the tourism and just as we said, out of the blue sky, bang, they're gone, amazing. This brazen, terrible attack. It's almost like they're just displaying this power to the whole world,
That's
crazy.
That's really what it was. What that was, to me, what it was. Okay, so they have what we were talking about. So 70% of the public probably is right off the top. Oh, I saw it on the news. That's it. It's 19 Muslims. Go back to sleep. Everything will be okay here if we just pass this Patriot Act and invade a few Middle Eastern countries on behalf of Israel. But then you're probably going to have maybe another, after your 70% of zombies, you'll have maybe 20% that are like, that does look a little fishy, but. I'm busy. I got to work. I got to put food on the table. I got a wife. I got kids. I can't spend hours researching this stuff. Then you'll have maybe 5 or 10% of the people that are really looking at it close. And out of that, maybe a few that'll actually go public with it.
Which is only a very small representation, isn't it? Overall, when you consider the mass reach of the media.
And when you look at, how do you get people like Judy Wood and Richard Gage and Steve Jones? And really, how did I get into this whole mess? Well, for me, it started when, I was a big Jim Fetzer fan. So, I heard him back in the 90s on Coast to Coast talking about Wellstone and JFK and all this other stuff. And so, what happened to Jim Fetzer? So I Googled him back in about 2010, found his Real Deal podcast, and I started listening to him. And he was having Chuck Baldwin on all the time, a retired physics and math teacher. And he did about 5 or 10 shows with Jim where he just talked about nukes. He did a bunch of PowerPoint slides and a lot of physics and stuff in there. And I'm like, wow, Chuck's right. And then one show, Chuck had a debate with Morgan Reynolds, former Bush administration individual. And he's big into the Judy Wood thing. And that was a 2-hour show where Chuck got a half hour and then Morgan would go for a half hour. They traded off like that. And at the end of it, I was so pissed off. I finally emailed Fetzer just out of the blue. I was just a Joe Blow. Nobody, I had his email. Emailed Fetzer and I said, hey man, this is what really happened. And then I broke down most of what you heard earlier. And Jim was pretty impressed with that explanation. So then he invited me to speak at Vancouver in 2012. So I did the Vancouver hearings in 2012, and before I ever got near the stage, as soon as it was announced I was going to be a speaker and what I was going to talk about, here come the attacks, with the Judy Wood crew, who I had barely heard of. I heard Chuck talking about him, but I never read the book or anything like that. vicious attacks. Pete Santilli eventually was one of them. Thomas Potter, Emmanuel Goldstein. Now, there's a great fake name to use, right? Emmanuel Goldstein, you know, right out of 1984.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The enemy of the people. Oh, you're in the truth movement? You're named Emmanuel Goldstein? Really? Oh, <yes.
laughs> Credit down the toilet there.
What truths are you going to unearth, Mr. Emmanuel Goldstein? I mean, so, and then you get, and then, so once they're, once those guys get tired of beating on you, then you get the Nanothermite crew. Mm. They'll come at you. So then you got Steve Jones and Christopher Boleyn, Mark Bilk, and that, Peter Wakefield Salt. I mean, some of these people, like, you want to just punch your monitor reading these emails, you know? So I'm like, okay, block, block, block.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one after the other. So I'm like, well, I must be doing something right, because all these shills are attacking me, and I haven't even opened my pie hole yet in public. And so I knew I must have been onto the right track. I'm like, well, if this was BS, if I was just a complete idiot and pulling it out of my rear end, well, then why would they attack me? And why do they keep attacking me? And
Jesus. So that architects and engineers for 9/11, that's a big group, Don.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not a small group. It's huge. So what's going on with these people? Who are they? I mean, who are these Judy Woods and these people, do you think? Have you got a scope on this?
Well, let's die. Okay, we'll talk about Judy Wood here for a minute. So the last email I got from Judy Wood, she spoofed Jim Fetzer's wife's name. So it says from, you know, Janice Fetzer. And the email, the whole body of the email, in completely Judy Wood's writing style. I mean, I've gone back and forth with Judy and her crew for years, so they know when I write something, I know when they're writing something. We're very familiar with each other. And she carbon copied people in the ADL, the SPLC, and the San Diego Jewish Journal on that email. So, well, Judy, who are you working for? Who are you hanging out with? Mm. League of B'nai B'rith, Southern Poverty Law Center, the San Diego Jewish Journal. What are these? Are these 9/11 truth groups? Or are these, yeah. Or are these Mossad front operations? You know.
Yeah, crazy, mm-hmm. Isn't it? They're so involved with all this. They set up these groups knowing that people like you are going to come out. That's basically...
Yeah, and so what they do is they try to... They're not going to try to convince me, but what they do is they try to keep me from getting any kind of traction in the so-called truth movement. They're trying to just splinter the community so that no cohesive movement ever really gets going to put any pressure on the system. And if you look at it, they've been extremely effective.
Yeah.
It's been so confusing. That's it, isn't it? Because that's why people just turn away and say, look, I can't cope with this, because there's too many different stories. Who's right?
So the average person that's interested, they look at, well, there's nanothermite, there's directed energy, there's nukes, there's RDX. What is it? I don't know. And so then they just kind of throw their hands up and walk away, which is the intended effect.
Yes.
Because the perps, the real goal is to just run out the clock.
Yeah.
Mm. I think eventually it'll just go away. It'll die a natural death.
Yep, it'll die on the vine. Yep, that's
it is. Yeah, yeah. Especially a lot of young people now, they don't want to know about that. You got a theory, Donald, on the info war with Mr. Jones?
Oh, it's Steve Jones. Yeah. Well,
no, Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, Alex Jones.
I'm not going to sit up here and bag him. I'm just saying, you know, he does not go near the Israeli thing. And
I will. Let's touch on...
Oh, let us know. Very interested.
Let's touch on Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Okay, and now, if people read my PowerPoint, which, you know, if you go to my blog, it's, you know, donaldfox.wordpress.com, and if you look on the right side, the recent post, it'll be the second one down. That's the last show I did with Fetzer. We might cover a couple of these slides here in the PowerPoint, but that you can do that, and then you can also watch the YouTube clip there where we do a lot of hardcore nuke info. So we hit that. So then That brings us to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and that same PowerPoint presentation I gave, it's modified from my conspiracy conference presentation back in 2013. And lo and behold, who shows up to watch my presentation? He wasn't giving one of his own. He showed up to watch mine. It was Richard Gage.
Was it?
Yep. And we sat through all these other presentations, but he was there when I said, yeah, I'll take questions for 5 minutes at the end of it. I only had 90 minutes, and Gage was the first guy in line, you know, trying to throw some cold water on the whole nuke thing. And that was that last half hour was pretty hard hitting. A lot of hardcore nuclear physics hit the audience, and I did jar a few people loose. I ended up talking to one lady out in the lobby for about an hour. She was, you could tell I kind of rung her bell, and you know, I did hate to just dump her off because I'm like, hey, I'll hit you with all this info, and then where do you go with it? So she was kind of spinning like a top. But so anyway, Richard Gage, it turns out he is Jewish, and that's not his real name. Apparently he changed his name is what I've heard.
They'll do that, yeah.
Yep. So that's
their real name changes, aren't they?
Well, they are, because it's part of the deception.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So look at two of your biggest chunks of your so-called 9/11 truth movement. Okay, so that totally run by Jews, Gage and Judy Wood, and then okay, Alex Jones. Okay, there's another good one. I talked about him in one of my JFK shows. He appears to be closely aligned with the Bronfman family. His lawyer is also the lawyer for Holly Lev Bronfman. And this is the lady that set up all of Alex's business entities, you know, limited liability corporations and things like that.
I see. Yes.
So you know, he gets people from Strat4, which is a intelligence organization closely aligned with Israel.
Yeah, we saw that. It was a very strange one, saying that people's IP addresses, you know, all the patriots that are joining up to the InfoWar and Prison Planet, their personal details are going out the back door to Stratfor. I don't know if that's true, but it was pretty frightening to hear that.
I've heard that in a couple of places, yeah. So I you know, not that I don't get up here and say don't buy Judy Wood's book, because there is some good info in there if you know how to parse through it. But I do recommend people don't go to the Infowars.com or Prison Planet, because you're going to get tracked and traced.
Is that what they're doing, Don? Are they finding out who the true patriots are, maybe through that type of thing?
That's going right into a database. You can rest assured.
So they know who's got what views, and I guess a lot of Americans, you know, are off the grid a lot, you know what I mean? And they do a lot of hunting, and they're, you know, they don't so much vote or whatever, and but if they're getting involved in the info war, they've got all their details.
Yeah, they know what you're buying, because once that cookie's on your machine, until you delete it, so they know what other websites you're going to. So they've got a whole profile on anybody that thinks they're rebelling against the system. Now, it turns out libertarianism is a completely Jewish economic system, the same as communism or capitalism or socialism, all run by Jews.
It's all the same.
It's spying in America, wasn't it? All that spying, it seems to be, all that information seems to be being sucked back to Tel Aviv for some reason. Wouldn't that be enough to scare Americans to death?
There's a big fat pipe running from Utah right over to Tel Aviv with all your data.
Yeah, and they're obsessed with the technology, you know. We just look at Google and all that, but also all the technology that's going into the drones that's spying on all of us is all made in Israel now and all contracted out of there as well. So it's amazing. They're also obsessed with transhumanism and all this type of stuff. We go through this a lot, also the pornographic industry and all this stuff to really shatter the minds of the culture and break it down. You know, and the sex and everything in the movies, Donald, it's just amazing what they're doing, the filth they're spreading, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm a guy that, you know, do I like to see some good-looking girls on,
of course,
on the internet once in a while? Yeah, of course, but you can't spend your whole day doing it. And, you know, I spend a lot of time with just looking at the USGS dust samples, you know, the barium and the strontium, and, you know, reading the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And,
yeah.
You know, if you want to know the playbook, folks, there it is. And I'm reading it hard and heavy, so look for some articles out of me in the near future on that.
Why don't we go through that a little bit? We can't, obviously, we can only scratch a tiny bit of the surface of your work today, Donald, but we can at least have a little look at it. But again, if people want to go to donaldfox.wordpress.com and scroll past the big, massive, colorful Boycott Israel logo up on the site, if you just scroll down a little bit, there is a video there with Jim Fetzer's show from March 23rd, 2015. And just under the video there, there's a PowerPoint presentation there in blue, and you can click on that, Don, and when people listen to this or later, they can have a look through that PowerPoint and go through all the the stuff that you talk about in there, which is incredible. But do you want to run through this a little bit, at least the materials and things, and let us know. And you know, obviously, it's a lot to get into, and we don't want to bamboozle people too soon. We can get you on again about this later as well to keep going deeper.
Sure, but
go through it a little bit anyway, because it's really interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about, okay, so, all right, so we had the pyroclastic flow clouds and these buildings were vaporized. So how do we really know, though, that this was a nuclear event? Well, we know what nuclear fission looks like when we see it. So let's go through the nuclear fission process, just a couple of real basics here. So typically you need a heavy element like, say, you know, uranium, 235, and when you hit that with a slow neutron, that's going to cause the nucleus to become unstable, and it'll fission apart, and it'll be an explosion. And that nuclear the nucleus of that atom will split into two parts, and you've got 400 different possible combinations of nuclear fission pathways. But typically what you see is most of the chunks, when that atom splits in two, it's not going to be in two equal halves. It's usually, you'll see a lot around 137 and then about 95. That's where the two peaks are. So then from there, those elements will break down further in the nuclear decay process, because typically the fission fragments are going to be very unstable. Only 10% of nuclear, the nucleus of atoms, only 10% of those nucleus are actually stable. The rest decay, break down into other elements. So when we see a nuclear fission process, two of the main constituents of this you're going to see are barium and strontium. Okay, and then, so how was that present at ground zero? And if it was, how do we know? Okay, well, the USGS took dust samples all over lower Manhattan on September 18th and 19th, 2001, over a dozen samples. And we see barium and strontium at some astronomical levels, particularly at that WTC-0116 locations, where we see 3,130 parts per million for strontium and 3,670 parts per million for barium, or that's over 0.3% by weight of the dust. So people would say, well, weren't barium and strontium in the buildings? Yeah, but there's no, you could not build a building with those levels of barium and strontium in it. Human beings just couldn't do it. They would die before the building went up.
Mm.
So that means right there you've got strong evidence just at that one sample location that this was a nuclear event. And then when we see over a dozen sample locations, the levels of barium and strontium, when they go up in one sample or they go down in the next, they vary in lockstep. So the coefficient correlation between the two elements over all these locations is 0.99. And one is perfect, so it's almost perfect, the correlation between these two elements. So that means whatever process produced the barium also produced the strontium. And the only process that can explain that is nuclear fission.
There it is. There it is, yes, that's for sure.
So right there you've got, that's a dead ringer. That's nuclear fission right there. And there's a bunch of other elements too, thorium and uranium. Now, we Jeff Prager is really the guy that did this USGS dust sample work, and he's kind of retired from public 9/11 research. So I've kind of taken the ball up for him, and this is where I got all the info. And I've spent a long time studying this stuff, and it all checks out.
So Judy Wood, Don, she's saying it was an energy weapon. She's going against any nukes that were used, but what you just said clearly states that is false. What she's saying.
Yeah.
If it was an energy weapon, there wouldn't be.
Well, okay, yeah. So what Judy Wood's trying to do is the whole purpose of her existence is to describe a nuclear event while denying nukes.
Mm, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But what you're reading out now says that there were pretty clearly.
There's really no debate. Now, scientists won't touch this for various reasons. That's why it's got to be a guy like me. See, I sat in the basement for years and years going, why isn't somebody going to come up and talk about this crap? Oh. And then I would piss and moan and sit there and watch my YouTube videos or whatever. And then finally I got off my butt and did something about it. So people are like, well, if this was true, why wouldn't blah, blah, blah be out talking about it? Well, they're either, under control of government funding or intimidated. Because if you have actual nuclear physics credentials, they got you on a short list. So I don't really blame those guys for not talking about it. So that's why, why is this guy talking about it? Well, if you think about it, I'm probably really the only one, a guy like me is going to be about it. Basically a layman that puts in the time to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That makes a lot of sense because, and they ended up getting that, Dmitry Kalazov. Didn't they put him in jail somewhere?
Yeah, he's rotting in a Thailand prison as we speak. And about a year ago, we did a show covering a lot of his stuff. And by God, he got a lot of it right, a lot of it. And I donated money to him. I don't know if he ever got it, though, because it was shortly thereafter that we just didn't hear from him anymore. And it turns out he was in a Thailand prison. So,
dear oh me. Yeah, so being such a high profile, too. Particularly in the military, they certainly got him, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, because he was in the military. See, I've never been in the military. I've always been a civilian, workaday type guy, lunch pail guy. That's been me. So Jeff said, "Well, let's run this by the best nuclear physicist we can find that would go anywhere near this stuff." And he did send it over to Chris Busby, and he looked at Jeff's data, and he says, well, one thing, okay, the USGS took samples not only across Manhattan, but they took samples right from the girder coatings of the towers. And one of the samples had 7.57 parts per million of uranium. And Busby said, that's just way too high for the U. That's 2 to 3 times background level. And then you've also got thorium in there as well. Thorium is a pretty rare element. It's produced from radioactive decay of uranium. Very rare. It shouldn't be in the dust of a collapsed building.
Great. Jeez. How were those guys able to get those samples, Don, to get in there and get them?
Why was the USGS out there in the first place? Well, what they were sent out there to do was, people were worried about the asbestos in the dust cloud.
Yeah.
So that's basically, the USGS sent out some chemists to look for asbestos. So that's why one other criticism here is, well, you don't have any isotopic data. Like, we don't have the isotopes of these elements. No, we don't, because these guys were chemists. They weren't nuclear physicists. And Jeff actually worked with some of them. He had called them, back and forth a few times and run the data by them. And he's like, this is nuclear fission, guys. And that's what it turns out, yeah.
Mm.
So thorium and uranium, the uranium is just way too high. And the, you look at the correlations on these graphs, and it's like, and then there's also elements like you normally wouldn't think of as being associated with the nuclear event, like zinc, sodium, and potassium. But when you start looking at these decay chains, these elevated levels of zinc, sodium, and potassium kind of stick out. And really the one for me to look at here is, would be zinc. What do you think? Zinc? Well, there are some radioactive isotopes of zinc, but they're very, very short-lived. And so these samples were taken 8-9 days after 9/11. So any zinc there that long would not be radioactive. But in one of the samples, the level of zinc was at almost 3,000 parts per million in the dust. And how does that much zinc get in the dust of a collapsed building? And it turns out there's a nuclear subprocess that's most likely responsible for that called ternary fission. I remember we had talked about how typically your atomic nucleus is going to split into two chunks when it fissions. Mm-hmm. With ternary fission, your nucleus will split into three chunks. And if it's true ternary fission, you're going to get three equal-sized chunks. So your uranium nucleus has 92 protons in it. So if you divide that by three, you know, you get 30. So that's the atomic number for zinc. Zinc has 30 protons in it. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing not only one, but two different nuclear fission processes.
So, just explain that, Don, two different processes. So was it two different setups?
No. Okay. So what it was, you're going to have, like, say you've got like 10 pounds of uranium or whatever it is, 15, however much they needed to get the critical mass. Some of the uranium nucleuses would split into two. Others were splitting into three. So you're seeing almost, two, three, maybe, you know, there might even be three or four different processes. I've started to do the math on some of that. So how does this happen? How do you get all this zinc? Well, what they do is they use tritium to boost the yield of a nuclear fission bomb. And that ternary fission is associated with very high energy levels. And as we could all see, 9/11 was an extremely high energy type event, and they use tritium to boost the yield of the fission stage of these bombs, and that's how you get all that zinc, because it's a boosted fission process.
The amount of energy it must have released there would be absolutely unbelievable, wouldn't it?
Yes, so now you're getting to the point where you can explain how this 110 story building, you know, two of them disappear in 9 and 11 seconds respectively. You're now getting the energy that's required to do this. Now, obviously, kerosene doesn't have, you know, enough energy to explain this, and then this Tesla free energy that, you know, as far as I know, it doesn't even exist. Now, is there some secret program somewhere? Yeah, who knows, maybe. But we've all seen nuclear bombs explode. We know what they do.
Well, the Bali bombing was, and they shut that down. That was nuclear.
Yep, that was a nuclear event.
Yeah, Joe Viles, and he explained all that. It was a... and how it was actually set up. And there was also a military man who was up there who quite courageously helped people who were injured. And he said it was nuclear because that was part of his expertise in the military, was explosives. And he made a claim anyway. He also made a statement to the paper, and they closed him right down. And apart from that, they got rid of all the material and dumped it out in the ocean very, very quickly. And, you know, everything they did was a cover-up, because I saw photographs from Joe Viles' site of actually concrete that was just turned into dust, concrete and steel. just like 9/11.
Yep, exactly. And I've heard from some nuclear weapons people. And okay, so Beirut, the Beirut barracks attack in 1983, that was a nuclear event. Oklahoma City bombing, 1995, that was a nuclear event. 9/11 was nuclear. Fallujah, that was nuclear. Christopher Busby's talked about that, where he's been over to Iraq, and he's taken dust samples out of the craters there in Fallujah, and he thought he was going to see depleted uranium, which is, you know, U-238, but he was seeing evidence for nuclear fission, and it looked a lot like these dust samples on 9/11.
Is that right? Yeah. Yes.
It's not new. They've been experimenting with it for quite a time.
It's can I read this for you, Don, just to get your opinion on it? It's talking about how they planted the nuclear devices, saying they drilled a hole in the bottom of the elevator shafts of the World Trade Center and lowered the nuclear device into the drilled hole, and they used some type of big sort of oil rig drilling type equipment to drill the holes for the depth they needed. And they're saying that because of this explosion, it produced very little nuclear radiation fallout. Is this true? I mean, did the radiation fallout of that get contained within the elevator shafts?
No, it did spread over Manhattan.
It went out. Yeah,
it did. Yeah, quite a few people have come down with cancer, but it
most of it though was contained. Do you think within the? Is that how they put the bombs in the shafts? Is that what they used in the buildings down the shafts? Do you think?
Well, they. That does make some sense. They were trying to contain it. Obviously, they didn't want to blow up every building in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
They were trying to keep a lid on it. You know, for months after 9/11, like, I've got pictures of people that were working the site, and before they were allowed to leave, they would go through a whole nuclear decontamination process. Technicians with, you know, full radiation suits on were scrubbing their boots and their shoes, so that they weren't dragging any nuclear stuff, you know, with them on the street when they left.
So they knew it was nuclear.
Oh yeah. They knew what they were.
Within, they knew what they were doing. What?
They had dump trucks full of dirt within maybe an hour of when Building 7 came down, going to Ground Zero, and they were just dumping dirt everywhere. And that's what they do. The first thing they do after a nuclear event is soil remediation.
So they knew exactly what was on, and they were planned all this. Dear oh me, you know, it's so obvious though, isn't it? Once you know, like people like yourself come along and start to put the facts out, it changes your whole attitude to it. And when you see these other things on it, you know, and as we were talking before we came on air about the JFK and how it all links up to 9/11. Everything sort of links up once you understand that it was a nuke. Everything becomes so clear.
Well, what did President Kennedy didn't want Israel to have hold of these nuclear weapons, and look what they
That's
have
right.
now. So who has them? You know,
Who's the only country that has nuclear weapons that hasn't signed the nuclear non-proliferation?
Exactly, and the United Nations stand down, don't they, Don? They stand down each time to let the inspectors go in to see what type of nuclear weapons Israel have, and they all stand down, the United Nations. I mean, that's power. I mean, my God.
Yeah, exactly. The amount of power they have is enormous. I mean, can you imagine, like, the Pentagon? How can you just fly a plane into the Pentagon willy-nilly? That's got to be the most heavily defended building on the planet. Well, I guess obviously it wasn't because they didn't defend it. But if you were to go to the Pentagon, you couldn't even swill a beer and take a whiz on the lawn without getting pummeled and arrested. Look at Iran. Iran has no nuclear weapons, yet look at all the kerfuffle we're getting out of Israel from that. I mean, the height of the hypocrisy is just, it's amazing.
It's just massive, massive wealth from these families, you know, these Zionist families that just can do whatever they want.
So, well, the interesting part of that Pentagon was that it killed a number of people who were very, very much into what was going on, as well as the... That's my little dog.
That's Gus's wife. Don't worry about it. She's barking orders out.
No, it's my little, one of my little dogs. But then they were two and a half, was it two and a half trillion or something short?
At $2.3 trillion worth of transactions were unaccounted for.
Yes.
And a full $1 trillion came up completely missing under Dov Zakheim, Rabbi Zakheim's watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And all the Jews that
and,
cashed in.
And that's exactly where it hit.
Cashed in from under the World Trade Center, didn't they, as well? We know Frank Lau did. We have to
yeah,
put
we've heard
him
that
in.
Story with with all the gold getting confiscated out of there, yep.
Yeah, yeah. What was the man's name again? I've had a brain freeze that said pull it. Pull the...
Oh,
the
Larry Silverstein. Oh,
yeah,
Silverstein.
Cashed in as well. All Jews. So... Don, before we wrap it up for today, could you just scrape just a little bit, but you have a section on your website called Rainbow in the Dark, Powerful Proof of 9/11 Nukes. We should sort of mention that before we wrap it up today. It's called Rainbow in the Dark, Powerful Proof of 9/11 Nukes. Just explain that a little bit for folks.
Okay, so the gist of that story was, again, we were talking about elements in the dust, and... If you look at that first picture there, you see kind of this blue glow at night coming up. Well, what's
it's
that
blue.
All about?
Yeah, it's blue, yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, does kerosene cause a blue glow? No. Okay, what that was Cherenkov radiation. So what that means is you've got charged particles traveling faster than the speed of light in a certain material, in this case, air. So that's how you get that blue glow. So... Really, what that means is, and we've got evidence of cesium and strontium in the dust samples. The cesium is one of the telltale elements of a nuclear event, and there's cesium in the dust samples in the USGS dust samples there, and there's strontium up the wazoo. So that blue glow that you saw at night—that's why they had those. They brought in those spotlights, that tribute and light. They were trying to come up with some sort of excuse for this blue glow that everybody was seeing.
That's pretty strong in that picture. Jeez.
Yeah, if you look at the top picture of the story, and then if you get towards the bottom there, that there's that whole blue haze all over Ground Zero there.
God,
it's
damn.
Very eerie. Very eerie.
Mmm. Dear, not you. Yeah.
Cesium and strontium, in the USGS dust samples. It's very deep, Don, when you go into the nuclear physics of this, but, I would suggest people, the thing that's good about your site, Don, it's looks plain, like it's plain, sort of nice looking site, but there's so much to go into there for people that will keep them busy for months, years.
Yeah, it took me years to assemble all this info, and everything's here on here is free. You don't have to sign up for anything. Have I done web development? Yeah. I don't have any cookies that track and trace you.
It looks good.
It's just a free WordPress blog. You know?
Yeah, I'd say for people, just don't miss anything. Just go onto donaldfox.wordpress.com and just have a look at all that. Click on the info, because when you click on it, you get pages and pages of stuff. There's a massive amount, a wealth of information in here that I'm going to probably spend ages going through just trying to get my head around it. Especially when you go through all these materials and stuff, it's very important for people to look at all this. All the stuff that you've isolated there and found in the materials, because that really is the icing on the cake, isn't it, Don? It really is the proof that we're looking for here at Ground Zero. Going through all these doors and energy weapons and who did it and who didn't do it and stuff, this is the real concrete evidence.
Yeah.
Well,
it certainly is.
I've always maintained there's two pillars of 9/11 research that you can start with. That's Jews and nukes.
Yep.
And
Jews and nukes. Yeah.
That's really the nuts and bolts of it. You know, any so-called truther, I think, okay, it's been, you know, more than 11 years. Almost going on 15 since 9/11. And anybody that, well, we're just calling for a new investigation. Really? You think the same system that brought you the NIST report is going to suddenly one day wake up, oh, hey, these guys are pissed off. We're going to do a real report this time. No, there's never, the White House is never going to get up there and say, yeah, you got nuked on 9/11, you know, so what? Keep going. No. Okay, so there isn't going to be no investigation. That's like, well, the Warren Commission sucks, so let's have the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Well, wasn't that a joke?
Mm-hmm.
So, calling for a new investigation, that's like writing your congressman. Okay, it's not going to happen. But there's as you can see here, there's more than enough data for you to figure out what actually happened. You know, you're just going to have to figure it out on your own. There's not going to be any authoritative government figure or somebody from the scientific community that's going to come out and spell it out for you.
God damn.
Yes, you just do the work yourself and come to your own opinion. And I think more people are starting to do that because, it's such an important event that really changed the world. You know, it really changed the world. It affected every country in the world. So,
We had, what was it, Garth? I don't know how many. Maybe been close to 17 or something new laws brought in after that, anti-terrorism laws that the Australian people don't know anything about, Don. Searching laws and all sorts of crazy stuff in this country that is hidden from us, that our Prime Minister, John Howard, he brought in all these anti-terrorism laws on the back of George Bush's Patriot Act. And John Howard, our former Prime Minister, was in New York on that day as well and working very closely with these people. And he was also in control during the Bali bombings and also the Port Arthur attacks. John Howard, the same guy. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. I'm going to have to look into him now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Do so, because he was in New York on that day and he's heavily involved. They gave him a little medal, didn't they, Garth? They gave him a little medal over there. George Bush gave him an honor medal or some type of medal around his stupid neck. Unbelievable. It's crazy. And Don, I just wanted to ask you, the nuclear bombs, just to get people sort of make them get their heads around this, were they sort of, were they mini nukes that were used? And what are we looking at here, just quickly, is this obviously new technology? Are we looking at the sort of suitcase sort of stuff that they implanted in the buildings? Because when I said sort of lowering nukes into the elevator shafts or drilling down, people would probably think a nuclear bomb, something that's, you know, the size of a car. But these things, how big would you estimate them to be, these kinds
probably
of nukes?
You're probably looking at yields around 0.010. So what exactly kind of bombs do we think they used? Well, we think it was neutron bombs. And what's a neutron bomb, real quick? Okay, a neutron bomb is a thermonuclear weapon. So, okay, what's a thermonuclear weapon? It's a hydrogen-based bomb. So it's a fusion weapon. So what's the difference between a hydrogen bomb and a neutron bomb? Okay, basically it boils down to it. The hydrogen bomb is in a different case. Instead of a depleted uranium or a U-238 case, which you have in your standard hydrogen bomb, A neutron bomb will have a nickel or a chromium case. And what's the point of that? Well, what that means is then instead of getting a bigger blast like you would with a hydrogen bomb, it allows neutrons to escape. So you get a blast. There are definitely blast effects from a neutron bomb, blast and heat, but it's less than a standard hydrogen bomb. But you get more of a neutron flux. It sends a lot of high-energy neutrons out. And that's high-energy neutrons are what toasted the cars, the 1,400-plus cars. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, toasted, absolutely. Incredible.
Yep.
Some powerful technology, man.
Oh, yes, it ever. So the bomb's not very big. That's basically, it could be carried by, say, one man?
Yeah, you're talking probably softball size. You know, maybe a bit bigger, you know.
Jesus, man, you wonder what they really have, you know?
Yeah, that's a scary thought. That's why I'm out here talking about this, because they like to nuke people. And just because it's not a 150 kiloton or a megaton or, you know, whatever size bomb, it's still a nuclear bomb. These smaller bombs have a much greater military application than the big ones do. No matter who you are, you can't just drop a 150 kiloton bomb on a city and get away with it. You know, they'll figure out who did it. But the smaller weapon, that keeps them guessing.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does, and they can strategically, as you said, the Oklahoma bombing blew the entire, you know, entire face of the building.
I saw one picture last year where that whole area was taped off. The police yellow tape. Instead, it said radiation on there.
Is that right?
Yep.
Knew that, and yet they deny it constantly. Mm. Deny it.
It took fertilizer bomb my ass.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. What did they zotted that poor guy? He was another stooge.
Tim McVeigh, that's the thing. You know, if you work for these guys, you could end up getting in that Oswald or that McVeigh type position. You know.
Yes.
They'll fill you up, you know, hey, you're doing great, you're doing everything we want, blah blah blah, you're awesome. And then one day a drill goes live or whatever, and then who's the patsy?
Yep. Gee, they are so cunning. I've often said this cunning that these people have is beyond human nature. You know, when I try to figure out how can a human be so cunning and plan so far ahead all the time?
That's a great question. See, that's the thing. That's kind of why you get resistance with the public. They're like, well, hey, I would never. I can't imagine anybody would do something like that.
Yeah, your own government. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it. Probably everybody you know wouldn't do it. Even people you hate wouldn't nuke you. But these guys will. There's nothing off the table for these guys.
No way.
Once you get into that mentality, you can really see how these guys operate.
Oh, man.
And these seemingly inexplainable events, suddenly the pieces start to fit.
Crikey. What's your idea there, Donald, of what's happening in the U.S.?
They're sucking us dry.
Yeah. We usually ask our American guests just because you're on the ground, you know, what's happening there, you know? So.
Well, apparently I've got a buddy up in Canada, Greg Felton, and he's telling me it's even worse in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said Canada's so bad they don't have to do false flags up there because the Zionists run it 100%. There's no resistance at all whatsoever. None. You can't, like, we got our friend Claire. She can't be on a radio show where they discuss the Holocaust, whether it was legitimate or not.
Yeah.
She can't even appear on the show if you're going to talk about that. She'll hang up. She's got to go. At least here in the United States, we can still debate it. But in Germany, you can't debate it. In Canada, you can't debate it. I always thought Australia, you know, watching the, you know, the Crocodile Dundee movies when I was a kid, I thought, well hey, these guys, they're not putting up with any crap. You can actually have freedom out there. Hey, man, I want to go to Australia. And then I hear, no, man, it's bad here. It's bad here.
Yeah, it's not as bad as Canada and stuff, at least. It's still, we've got a small population, and, you know, it's not too bad. But it's scary as well, because we have, even in New Zealand, I've seen these bizarre things. I don't know if you've seen in Australia, Pine Gap. They look like golf balls out in the middle of nowhere, and they've got these in New Zealand, and they're spying on everybody. Every text message, every phone call, every keystroke on your computer, everything goes through these centers. And we hear they're doing that here as well. Listening to absolutely everything. It's creepy, you know?
I've assumed since I got public with this stuff at the end of 2011 that everything I do...
It's done.
Yeah, I just assume, hey, they're reading all of it. If it hits the wire, boom, they're reading it, you know.
Of course they are. Well, there was an authentic, you know, Wilfred Adam, don't you?
Yes.
Well, Wilfred is a guy, he has a small tractor, and he's done some work here for us on our farm. And Wilfred was in trucking for many years, and he spoke to this guy who was up there where that Pine Gap is, and he got lost. He was driving a semi, and he was going along this road, and it was a very wide, beautifully constructed road, and this was before we had those satellite types of things in your truck to tell you where you were, and evidently, out of nowhere, these people came, military if you like, stopped him and turned him around. And we're talking out there, way out in the desert sort of thing, where there was absolutely nobody. But this guy got on the wrong road, and it took him a while before he realized that he was lost.
Oh, yeah, there was hunters hunting out there in the 1980s who saw these spaceships, Don, come directly out of holes in the ground and shoot up and disappear. People think they're seeing UFOs with extraterrestrials, they're government crafts, you know, and they're doing that there. And there's whole underground bases under there. They're working with the Americans, with the Zionists, yeah. God knows for.
Yeah, I had heard, now I'm not a big UFO guy, but what I heard was that Area 51, they moved all that stuff to Australia.
Yeah, probably, I wouldn't be surprised.
Probably right, yes.
We're seeing bizarre, I mean, it's just happening recently out in our outback areas because it's such a big landmass, you know. These people and locals are seeing these glowing ships and all sorts of new types of technology, flying around all over the place, you know. So God knows what they've got.
What happened to Whitlam, Gough Whitlam, when he was going to terminate the deal with America, re the Pine Gap and the other one. And suddenly old Gough got booted out. He was refused supply, and they had a re-election, and that was the end of Gough. That's one of the stories I've heard, but I would imagine it was true because he was railing on about Pine Gap, and he wanted to cease the agreement with the Americans on it. So evidently it was pretty, you know, we're going back to the 70s here.
Yeah, something's going on there.
So there's definitely something going on there. Hmm.
Anyway, yeah. Oh, God. All right. You ready to pack it up, Don?
Sure, yeah. If,
don't want to keep you too late.
No, it's fine. No, it's only it's about 10 to 8 here p.m., so it's not too bad. But typically people will tend to glaze over if you do, you know, 2 hours nuclear physics, you know.
Yeah, I think we did it better today, just sort of going through things. And you said you would come back soon to go through some JFK research you're doing, and I think that's important with what we're doing now because it explains a lot, and it will be sort of like an add-on conversation to sort of keep this one going.
Absolutely.
Before you go, Don, Michael Collins Piper wrote a book, Final Verdict.
Final Judgment, yep.
Final Judgment, that's right.
Yeah, that's the one.
Did you, what do you think of that?
That is great work.
Yes.
I cite that quite a bit in my research. In fact, I did a whole show basically. It was basically doing the audio version of Piper's book. People can look that up. If you're on YouTube and you just punch in Don Fox Perm Index, that should bring it up. And Gary King and I did about a 50-minute show, and that really gets into who the players were in JFK. And then if you go to radiofetzer.blogspot.com or webookyourshow.com, if you look up Jim's show, he did a show a few weeks ago on Jack Ruby's address book. That is absolutely, absolutely fascinating stuff. And he comes across all the same perm index stuff that, you know, Piper and I are talking about.
Hmm.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a lot of reading to do.
Yeah, that we haven't done a show on JFK, but it's going to be
really the whole. And Gary King and I talk about this. Gary King's my producer and co-host. If people don't know who he is, we talk about this. You really can't understand 9/11 until you know JFK.
Yeah,
and you can't understand the world you live in today if you don't understand 9/11.
Mm.
So important.
It is important, isn't it? So we should have done JFK first.
That's all right.
But no, it's okay. I mean, it's, you know, Fetzer, we cover all this stuff. And see, this is the kind of, you know, the emails we get. We don't get paid a red cent by anybody for any of this stuff. But this is how hard we hit it.
Mm.
You know, me and the guys I correspond with. And, I mean, we really do the homework here.
Yeah.
And now, am I the smartest guy on the planet? You know, probably not. But I think the key to it is that I'm bitter and I'm pissed off.
That's good. How good is that? You know, you're a man. You know, you've still got that survival instinct in you. You know, it hasn't been washed away. You know,
that's it.
You still want to survive. You know, and find out what the hell's going on while you're on this earth. That's what we're here to do. We're here to find out what's going on.
Mm.
What happened?
Because I used to get into Jim Fetzer a lot, but I've sort of last few months been off a bit. But he did some great stuff with Greg Hallett, re the intrigues of governments, etc., etc. And that, he does some great stuff. So it's you know, I'll certainly get back into Jim. There's no way to, you know, it's one way of learning because it's such a broad area, isn't it? Because what Jim does, like, I mean, when you look at the Hallett work, although he doesn't get into the Israel and the Jews and all that sort of stuff, he gets into the government and how they're controlled. And that's very fascinating because it all ties together, as we spoke earlier. And it's going to be very interesting. I'm looking forward to the discussion with you, Don, with JFK, because that's always fascinated me, you know, how they could just go in and do that. And when you read, especially after reading Michael Colin Piper's book, it really got me thinking, you know, about the nuclear bit. So I'd recommend that book for everybody to get into, and it's not expensive on a Kindle.
Yeah,
I got the PDF for $10 from the publisher. That works too. You can read it on any computer, but I didn't know there was a Kindle version of that. If there is, I'm gonna start. I'll start promoting it more. I email Mike Piper once in a while, and I heard his health wasn't the greatest the last time I talked to him, but hopefully he's doing okay. But one thing he said was he got a massive data dump from like a local Dallas journalist. He got like an anonymous envelope in the mail with just this whole data dump, you know. Because when I first started out on this stuff, you think, oh, Texas, oil guys, these are big rednecks, 10-gallon hat, you know, cowboy, the whole shot. But it turns out Dallas is not too unlike any of these other places, completely run by Jews. Once you figure that out, because banks own the oil companies.
Of course.
You know, oil companies don't, hey, let's go invade Iraq. No, banks decide we're going to control the resources in X, Y, or Z country. Let's invade. You know, oil companies pump oil out of the ground and sell it. The banks own the oil companies. And so once you start looking at it at that level, then this stuff starts fitting together. Because when you start, you know, one thing I came across in my research was that, you know, LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, he was shipping guns from Texas into Palestine back in the 30s and 40s.
It's way back then, yes.
Yep. To the freedom fighters, you know, the Jews that were fighting the Palestinians back then. And another name that popped up, who else was doing that? Well, so was one Mr. Jack Rubenstein.
Yes. So I wonder why they set him up.
Well, somebody had to take out the patsy. He was kind of a fallback plan. You know, I'll tell you, we can get into that. We'll get into that on the next show. Well, there is a can of worms there, boys.
I'll get back into it. That's been a fascinating one, that one. That's been great talking to you, Don. It really has.
Don, you want to tell us about your shows that you're doing or anything else you want to get out there?
I do these interviews like, oh, you didn't plug your blog.
Of course.
You didn't plug your radio show. I don't get paid for any of it.
I'll put it all up with the Eddie Companies, the podcast link. Yeah, and I'll send that to you when it's up today.
Yeah, if people go to www.VTN, Veteran Truth Network is what it stands for, VTNradio.com. And if you go to the past shows, you'll see a Don Fox folder in there, and you can hear the last two. The show is supposed to premiere Sundays at 4 p.m. Central or 5 o'clock Eastern. Not sure what time that would be in Australia, but I think most people probably listen to the podcast that's up there later. It'll have 2 weeks worth of podcasts after. If it goes back farther than that, you have to pay $3 a month for the archives. But you get archives for all the hosts on there, not just me.
And it's a new one, isn't it? Is that a pretty new VTN that sprung up?
Yeah, there was a big kerfuffle about that, too. It was supposed to be Veterans Today with Gordon Duff. And
There was a split there, wasn't there?
Yeah, Gordon canned Stu, and then
that's right.
Not long thereafter, he canned Fetzer, so then...
Gordon's gone nuts.
Yeah, Gordon wanted me on that New Veterans Today network, but I was going to go there, and then I said, you know what? If you fired Fetzer and you fired Stu Webb, I'm sticking with Jim and Stu. And turns out Gordon's a Jew. He's self-described as a rich Jew with a handler, so...
Is that right?
Yeah, we were talking about that, Gus. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear oh me. Yet he did that speech, a talk where he was spot on, where he said the world is run by criminal organizations, and the biggest criminal organization is the Zionist Jews.
Yes, yep.
So I'm wondering why he would have said that. I mean, a lot of us knew it anyway. I mean, going back into how Hollywood has always made the Italian mafia as the strongest, but they weren't. Back in those days, the Jews ran everything, and that was in the days of JFK's father when he was on the political arena. And it was what was his name? The big Jew boss then.
Meyer Lansky, probably.
Meyer Lansky. Well, I read there once where to get his son, JFK, to run as a president, this guy was describing it. He said he had to go and eat fat with Meyer Lansky because it was the Jew support that just got him over the line. So whether that was organized by his father or not, that was just something I was touching on.
Yep. Meyer Lansky turns out to be the key guy to look at in organized crime. So the, you know, the La Cosa Nostra was definitely eclipsed by the Kosher Nostra.
The Kosher Nostra.
Yep.
Yeah, and yet Hollywood made such a big deal of it, didn't they, with the three big movies.
Who runs Hollywood?
Yes. Who runs Hollywood?
Yes.
Interesting stuff, isn't it?
It would be our kosher friends there, wouldn't it? Yes, it would.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. They don't hide it anymore either.
No,
but it is amazing, you know, even on the food products we consume, there is a fee, a kosher fee. How do they do it, these people? They're probably a bit over, say, 2.5% of the world's population, yet all the products, or many of the products, you can look for it, it's on the label. And there is a certain amount of money going from that product back to these people.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating.
Yeah, it's when I started, like, hey, let's do the boycott Israel thing. But a lot of companies you wouldn't think that would have anything to do with stuff like this. Well, there they are. Johnson & Johnson.
Maggi, Coca-Cola, CNN, KFC.
KFC, yep, all those.
We have Paul's Milk in Australia.
Okay.
Don, Paul's Milk, yeah. We have a few of these are quite popular here, Garth. Quite a lot of those. You wouldn't think so. It's amazing.
Yeah. Even with a small population like we are, but they must figure it's worth it. But then it gives them big control, doesn't it? It gives them control over our food. I think that's mainly what it's all about.
I wouldn't call this food.
Yeah.
Fanta and Pepsi and Sprite.
Yeah, it is what it is. they control the money. So, and you know, we'll do a show on this sometime. But what they do is they monetize the resources of the earth. So they basically own everything in this system because they own the power to create currency and credit. And so they own the people. They own the resources in the ground. You know, they own everything. So you shouldn't be shocked when some company or other or some country is controlled by them because they basically own all of it. When you're born in the United States, and this is probably like this anywhere that's got a central bank. When you're born here after, I forget what year it was, but anyone born now, what happens is the Treasury Department sends your birth certificate over to the Federal Reserve, and then the Federal Reserve then writes a check to the Treasury for like $600,000, because that's the taxes you're expected to pay in your lifetime. So they own you right out of the chute.
Yep. Yep.
That is frightening, isn't it? It really is.
So, you're collateral for a treasury loan. See, the treasury can't create its own money. It can't create its own currency or credit. It has to borrow it from the private Jew-run central bank. So the people are collateral for all these loans.
And evidently, when your parents sign your birth certificate,
Gwim.
That's when you're signed over to them as collateral. Is that correct?
Goyim. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Yeah. So
if you don't have a birth certificate, good luck going anywhere in life. Unless you want to live in the woods. completely in the woods. No contact with civilization. So, you know, until we really get this thing turned around, it's pretty ugly, guys.
Ghastly.
It certainly is. Man.
All right. Thanks for that, Don.
Well, yeah, I hope I brightened your day.
You've brightened my day now. I'll go and get some Johnson & Johnson and watch Sky News. And have my Coca-Cola and KFC. Yeah.
Never mind.
With some Kraft Vegemite or cheese on there, Garth, as well. And,
yeah.
And read the Sun newspaper. And the National Geographic.
The terrible telly.
Yeah, in my Giorgio Armani suit, by the way.
Yes.
I'm sitting here in my pair of Levi's, guys. So.
I can't see that on there. Is it on there?
No. No.
That's good.
There's no video here, but yeah, I'm wearing my Jewish jeans, so.
There you go. Oh, God. Oh, there's no escape for these people.
Yeah, what aren't they in? What aren't they in?
It's everywhere, boys.
All right.
It certainly is. All right, that's been really good.
Yeah, good to speak to you. And the VTN radio network's fantastic, Don. It's really good. And most people, if you click on there, it'll just start playing. They don't stop.
Yep, it will. Yeah, it will, yeah. So if you click on, like, past shows, the audio will stop.
It's great.
But, yeah.
I record them all and listen to them on my podcast. They're fantastic shows on VTN Radio Network. And, of course, people need to go to donaldfox.wordpress.com, and I'll put that links up today accompanying this. So great to speak with you, Don, and I'll keep in touch, and we'll get another show going quite soon, actually, to tie up with this on the JFK.
You bet, yeah. Absolutely had a blast, guys. This was awesome.
That'll be great. You take care.
You too.
Thanks, Don.
Have a good night, guys.
Bye.